Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the New Printing Press. Really the largest podcast in the whole Christian space. I mean, we just reach hundreds and thousands of people every single week. But we're brand new, about 5 weeks in, talking about faith, innovation, technology. And I'm honestly using this as an opportunity to talk to people who I look up to, admire, who I think are doing really innovative things in the church. And I'm excited because I got with me today the one and only Pastor Adam Smalcom, among many other things, lead pastor of Vive Church. What's up, man? How are you?
Doing so good. Good to chat with you. I sound a little bit off, but I'm feeling good. Don't worry about that.
I was going to say you sound like you just preached like 10 weeks, 10 straight nights at the Potter's house or something.
Yeah, you know? I wish I could say it was because we had so many Easter services that, you know, my voice is done, but it had nothing to do with that. It just has to do with some kind of sickness that kicked my butt, and I'm coming off the back of that, but I kind of like it. You know, it gives me some texture to my voice that I don't usually have. Yeah. All I usually have is an Australian accent, but now I've got some texture to it, which makes me sound intimidating.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. I want to talk about where, you know, kind of your journey from Australia to the US in a second. First of all, though, I just want to say thank you. Thanks for being who you are, what you do. You've meant a lot to my wife and I and our church, and yeah, man, have just meant a lot to us, have championed us, and not just from a business standpoint, but also from a ministry standpoint. You're on the board of the church I was on staff on for many years. So in many ways, you've kind of been my boss, which is awesome. Man, I just appreciate you. I appreciate what you do for the church. I appreciate what you've done for us. You were one of the earliest believers in what we're doing. Proud to say you're an investor and an advisor to us at Pulpit AI. So thanks for being on our team, man. It's awesome.
Oh, come on.
And we're grateful.
My absolute pleasure. We love you guys. We believe in you. And I think it was really easy. I think even just seeing the way you ministered at C3LA and then to see you launch out in a company, I think for us, we always back people, right? More than even products, we back people. And when you get somebody who has got intelligence, who's got drive, who has got industry insight, I think that person can apply that insight to any product and it's going to succeed. And so it's no surprise to me to see Pulpit AI doing so good, and just to see everything you touch turns to gold, Michael. love you, love your family. And love chatting innovation.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited to jump into this. You know, so Jake and I, you know, who's my co-founder, we always, we had this saying about Vive when we talk about Vive, and it's that Vive creates, we say that Vive creates their own weather. Vive, that there is not a ecosystem. And I say ecosystem, and it's funny because, like, knowing you guys so well and remembering you first moving here, it's been cool to see the journey. But the reality is there's not a lot of places in the church space like Vive and like what you guys have built. Very heavy culture of innovation, big faith. But also, honestly, in my opinion, coupled with like real pastoral care, discipleship, like, you know, all of that. So I want to get into some of that and how you've been able to manage, hey, we're going to build something big and innovative, and we're going to take big swings, and we're going to try big things, and we're going to work hard. But at the same time, we're also going to just like love and pastor and disciple people, which I think you guys have always like done really well. But before we jump into that, so like you planted a church in Silicon Valley. And how many years ago was that?
It was 12 years ago now. So 2012 or 2024. So it's taken us 12 years to get to where we are.
Okay, so 12 years. So you are from Australia. Give us a bit of the backstory. I think a lot of times when people think like, going to move to America to go to some like big urban, you think like LA or New York or in some cases Seattle, but Silicon Valley is like such a unique place because it's a very powerful place. It's obviously the innovation capital really of the world. So like, talk to me about when you were in Australia doing ministry there, were you always like, I'm going to go to the most innovative place in the world and try and plant there? Like, what was the motivation? Like, tell me a bit about that story. Cause that's a huge step.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a key question. I think in really describing what you explained there, that Vive, you know, determines the weather. I think for us, I would articulate that saying as we have always intentionally been disruptive. We've always intentionally looked at what culture is existing in an environment. And our job is not to adapt to that culture, but to create a new culture. But to do that, you kind of need to have a barometer out there to figure out what is the current culture and what elements do I need to add into it to change that culture, right? And so, And so for us, we were in youth ministry in Newcastle, Australia, and we were, I would say, pretty disruptive in the youth ministry sense. You know, we were doing things that was probably intimidating to youth ministries at the time. We had a lot of kids coming from projects, a lot of gang members coming in back in the day. We had security scanners on the way in the youth ministry because people were bringing in knives. It was just kind of the kids we were reaching. And that really disrupted a lot of Christian youth group perceptions. Like, well, I just want my kid to go to a nice youth group, right? And so we had really geared our youth group, not as a group, but a ministry to transform a generation. And, you know, in the time I was also on the preaching team at our church. And I had these ideas about, hey, look at evangelism as marketing. How do we market our church? Let's look at the way the world markets. The world markets with billboards. The world markets with all kinds of different marketing strategies. What if we applied that to evangelism? And I had suggested at the time to my pastor, hey, how about if we do all these ideas, took it before the board, and the board had said, look, that's just not what we do in the church. And I really hated that sentence. I respected their decision, but I just didn't like that sentence. That's just not what we do. I feel like it was such a limited perspective that we only do what's been done. We're not going to forge new ground. We're not going to do something that has never been done before. And I think it irritated me enough in a holy way where I was like, okay, cool. Well, I need to be in an environment where we try new things. And so we had made a decision then. I felt like that was the cue to start a church of our own. At the time, we were planning Sydney. We thought that's probably the most innovative area of Australia. When my uncle had put out a tweet, he said, I'm in beautiful San Francisco, would love to see a church planted here. Now, I had no idea, Michael, about the Bay Area. I had no idea about the Silicon Valley. I just began to research and I began to find out. I couldn't even find the Silicon Valley on the map. I was trying to look at where is the Silicon Valley until I realized, oh, it's a mindset. It's kind of like this ethos of startup, venture, innovation, belief. And as I began to research, I began to realize this is the center of the modern world. Like if Paul wrote, I desire to go to Rome because Rome is where all roads led to and from. Rome set the culture for the world. So if what happened in Rome happened in Ephesus or happened anywhere else around the world, well, I should desire to go to Silicon Valley because there's every chance that that's, if we could change the culture there, it's going to affect the globe. And we just made a decision. That's where we're going to be. And we packed up everything in 2012. No one would support us. Literally, no one would support a church plant in California for some reason from Australia. But we went old school missionary. We just sold our house, sold our belongings. Kids sold their toys and we had yard sales. And we then scrounged up enough money to go and plant the Silicon Valley. There was another church planter that planted at the time with $1 million budget, and we planted with $60,000. And we're sitting in a round table meeting with all these church planters. Everyone was sharing their launch budgets, and I was so embarrassed when it got to us. I said, "Hey, we got $60,000." Everyone laughed at us, literally laughed at us, and it was a humbling moment. But that same church plant that planted with $1 million. Doesn't exist today. They quit after 2 years. And I think it was just because they had the security of finances. They didn't have the spirit of innovation. They weren't ready to get disruptive. And I think that's been our story ever since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, that's amazing. 60K. And here you are 12 years later. That's wild. Yeah, it's so funny how there's probably so many parallels with that in the church planning world versus company building, right? You know, it's like you raise a whole lot of money right out of the gate and you can get really comfortable and a ton of resources maybe always doesn't require a lot of innovation. You know what I mean? But when you start with 60K, you got to go. So what was the moment like... you know, in the business world, it's called traction or product market fit. But when was the moment where you were like, all right, we've moved here, we've done some gatherings, we're forming a little team. Was there like a moment where you were like, all right, I think this thing's going to work. Like, I think this vision that I've had in my head, or is that just always like an ongoing an ongoing kind of
thing? I think it's an ongoing mystery, to be honest with you. Is it working? Because I think as a visionary, you live so far in the future of what the picture is that you're building, and it feels fragile all the time. I mean, you said something so key just before. You know, you were kind of alluding to the fact that sometimes innovation is built the best when there's not the resources. You know, when you don't have all the funding in the world, you have to get so innovative. You have to be creative with, you have to create something from nothing. This is kind of like the essence of pure innovators or inventors. You're taking something that doesn't exist and you're putting something together from minimal resources. I actually think that one of the greatest gifts, when I look back, Michael, I look at the fact that we didn't have all the funds. At the time, I hated it. Don't get me wrong. I wish we had more money at the time. I was praying every day, God, would you send money? Would you send money? But now I look back and it actually got us real gritty. It formed in us like this edge that we don't need all the luxuries. We just got to kind of keep the core thing. And that's what produced, I think, a bit of a hunger and an appetite for us to have that drive to keep building and keep pushing through when others were quitting. Now, where was the key moment where I feel like, oh, this is going to work? I feel like year one was really interesting because, to my surprise, we had a lot of people come in the first year. Like, I was absolutely shocked. We had people coming from all over the place. The church grew really quickly. And so much so that we ran out of space in our 300-seat auditorium. And I thought, I was trying to figure out what is it that's inspiring people to come. I found out that it was like the story of faith moving countries to start a church. So these guys are really invested. And so I thought, let's do this every year, you know, for 5 years. And so we launched a 5x5 vision, which was we'll plant a church every year for 5 years. But the thought was, as long as the church commits, you know, X amount of money, and every time the church supports the vision, that's when I'm reminded this is going to work. Because it's not just my idea. There's people supporting it. There's people who are coming around it. And I feel like that's the same with a company, right? Like, when you as a founder, you have an idea, and if it's in your head alone and you're convinced of it, well, that's one thing. But when you actually start to see people gravitate around that vision, that they get inspired by that vision, they want to build that vision, even sometimes for free, or they want to offer up their connections because they see what you're going to do is going to help things or help society. Well, that's the moments that you need to reassure yourself, oh, I'm on something here. Not convince yourself that I'm on something, but remind yourself, hey, other people see what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I also think too, and this is another thing that I want to get your perspective on. I think when you have that kind of vision and you put the ownership of that kind of vision into the people, the church, I also think that you draw and recruit really high caliber and high capacity people, right? Yep. Because high caliber people and high capacity people are drawn to vision. That's something that I think you guys have done really well, even within like your church staff and everybody you have around. Yep. So like when we talk about like, okay, you guys have launched how many campuses now? How many campuses have you guys launched?
We're launching our 12th campus now in Frankfurt, Germany.
Okay. Yeah. 12 campuses all over the world, which is just amazing, right?
Incredible.
And such a cool thing to do. But that is like, I've met your campus pastors. They're not the like stereo. And I was a campus pastor, so I can make fun of my own kind here, right? They're not like the stereotypical, like I just kind of like manage and I just kind of like, I'm doing this until I can do the next thing. And I kind of just like am the event producer. Like, you have some serious guns that are on your team, that are around you, that are building. How have you been able to develop that and sort of buck that trend of like, the growing, innovative, big church. Do you get what I'm asking? Like, how have you been able to cultivate that? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in talent acquisition, meaning you want the best product, you have to get the best people. You know, I think the Silicon Valley is built on this as an ethos that you get funding to hire the best people you possibly can because not everyone's created equal. You know, not everyone's built with the same drive. Not everyone's got the same intellect and insights. You're a product of your environment for sure. And people get ahead and people are intelligent because they've applied themselves. And when you find intelligent people, not available people, you actually find that it will actually pull the whole organization up, right? And so what we've done is we've really intentionally from the beginning have literally held a high standard in who are staff at Vive Church and who are campus pastors. Now, with that too, I want to give them as much ownership as possible, right? So my job in hiring a campus pastor is I select the most skilled people. Like I've got lawyers who were doing law, who are now pastoring our campuses. I've got people who run their own products, their own companies who have forfeited that. I've got TV personalities, people who literally left that industry to come and build the church. Now, I treat them in many ways like a C-suite, where I give them problems that they have to build and they have to fix, not just for their campus, but for the whole church. And then my job ends up being, I just handle the problems that they can't handle. Right. And so what I've got in campus pastors is I've got them on the problems of the church. Now, what's the problems of the church? How do we expand? How do we grow? How do we reach the world? How do we take the Great Commission and how do we distill it down to our local environments? But how do we do that collectively? And so I'm engaging their mind in building a product called the church, but doing it in a way that it benefits us globally. And that takes a huge amount of intelligence and talent. And so at the end of the day, it's not just that they're doing a task as in running a service. The campus pastors have to be spiritually elite. They have to have a model life, right, where their character is just unquestionable, and they have to be highly intelligent. I'm telling you right now, any one of my campus pastors could go and build a business and it would be successful. But they've got a deep calling and a conviction. Instead of building a business, going to build the church.
Yeah, that's awesome. How do you think that, so like one thing I love about what you guys have built is there's a culture of like hard work, right? Yeah. Like, you know, you talk about like underpinning all of the intelligence and the calling and the gifting is like, we're going to work really hard and we're not going to apologize for working really hard. And in a day and age where like people are talking about a 4-day work week and Christians are, you know, Sabbath is now 2 and 3 days and I'm going to, you know, we're in this world, right?
Oh my gosh.
Man, when I'm around your team, I get the sense that people work really hard, but they're not like exhausted. You know what I mean? Like they're loving what they're doing. And I've been around both kinds of teams, right? Where it's like, man, we're working hard, but we're just like, man, we're dying here. Yeah, exactly. How do you like, and I guess I want to couple this with a question I was going to ask. Last time I was at your church, you were talking a lot about building a healthy church. Like, hey, how do we focus on what's health? What does health look like? Like, how have you been able to manage, hey, we're going to have high expectations. We're not going to take our foot off the gas and we're going to launch new locations and we're going to try stuff. But at the same time, we're going to be healthy and we're going to pastor people and we're going to look after our staff. Like, how do you do that? And what does that look like? Because I think we need like a revisiting of hard work
in
business and in ministry. And I don't think you have to sacrifice like emotional or mental health for like, I wake up every day and I work really hard to build something. Like, how do you think about that? How do you work that out in your own team?
Mike, I love that question so stinking much because this is like, I feel like I am a contrarian at the moment in the Christian world when it comes to this stuff. You know, there's so much narrative about rest, Sabbath. It's over-glorified to the point where it's missing the meaning of what a rest and a Sabbath is. You know, there are so many books, and I'm not going to name authors, but there are, I think their intent might have been originally good, but they create followers who perpetuate this pseudo-doctrine of work from rest, don't work hard, don't strive, which really is countercultural to everything Paul writes. He says, I run to win. I strive with all my might. You know, and you look at the beginning of the Bible, the first gift God gives to Adam is a job. The first gift, he's like, he makes man. He says, check this man made in my image. Hey, here's your job. Go and name all the animals. Tend the garden. And what he does more than work, he gives him purpose. He gives him meaning. He gives him drive. And there is nothing, there is no formula I can give you or antidote, that's probably a better word, antidote to depression that I can give you that doesn't have drive and work involved in it. The people who are most depressed in life, they're getting a prescription, a drug prescription for their depression, when really their emptiness comes from they've got no purpose in what they do. They've lost their drive. And really what we have is God gifts us with the ability to work hard. You know, people don't realize, here's a little hack. When you get to heaven, you're still going to work. Heaven is not going to be a vacation of rest. Heaven is going to be using all the gifts that God gave you and doing something magnificent to his glory. Because how are we going to glorify God in heaven? Through the work of our hands. That's how we glorify God on earth, is through the work of our hands. So when we build things with excellence, we're actually glorifying God. When we build things with averageness, we're not glorifying God. So there is a way to work where our reward isn't rest. Our reward is glorifying God. Now, we need rest along the way, but rest is a rhythm. And if you don't have a healthy rhythm of rest, then you won't actually have a healthy life. So rest should be a rhythm. Rest shouldn't be a season. Okay. It shouldn't be like, yeah, I'm resting in this season. Well, I mean, that just means you never had a rhythm.
There's a new term. They're calling it wintering. I'm wintering. I'm in a season of wintering. My first job in 2009 in the middle of a recession was like $400 a week, and I was probably working 70 hours a week. There's this one of my favorite shows is Mad Men, and there's this scene where Peggy walks into Don Draper's office and she's like, "You didn't say thank you for what I just did," and he just looks back at her. And he's like, "That's what the money's for. Like that's why I pay you." You know.
But oh, I love and that. I get love there's, Mad Men too, I get by the
there's,
way.
Yeah, I get that there's, you know, there's like the bad direction of that. But I think what you're saying is absolutely right. And that is that, like, how do we reclaim, you know, like there's all this talk about we're going to reclaim technology for the kingdom and AI for the kingdom and all that kind of stuff. But like maybe work needs to be reclaimed, you know, again, you know. So how do you
work okay, does then, need to so be reclaimed?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just going to say, like, work needs to be reclaimed because there is a reward on the other side of work that you miss out on if you never work. The reward of accomplishment, the reward of satisfaction. You know, Jesus worked. On the seventh day, he rested. He looked over everything he created and he was well pleased. That well pleased is that energy boosting reward that comes after work. Okay. But if you don't work, you never achieve that. Looking back over a company you've built or people you've discipled or lives that you've helped, you know, marriage or whatever your ministry or your company or whatever you've built, whatever you've added to the world. If you don't add things to the world through hard work, you don't get that point where you get to look back and go, man, that's pretty good. And that's something that we need to do. Like when we sit down and I encourage you, I'm like, hey, Mike, man, what you're building is awesome. That's a reward. That's a reward right there for going, yeah, I did put my blood, sweat, and tears into this. And yeah, it is changing the kingdom of God. Like we're getting sermons out quick. We're getting equipping groups. We're doing all these things. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And that reward is an internal builder in our lives that actually gives us a stability.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so true. Yeah. Yeah. It's a job well done, right? It's like, yeah. I love that. So what does health look like at Vive Church? When you guys are thinking through, because I think that's the other question everyone's asking, right? As you guys have been exploring that, what does health look like? Or how are you guys attempting to understand what health looks like?
Yeah, this is an ongoing challenge, I think, for us, because I think we're looking at it from many different levels, right? What's the health of an organization? What's the health of us as individuals? What's our spiritual health, our emotional health, our physical? So they're all different brackets that we're looking at. And it's this is so far out of my wheelhouse because I'm not a feeling guy. Like, you know me, I'm not super dialed into this stuff. But for me, I kind of just put it as some pretty surface indicators that determine if we're healthy or if we're not, right? I think one of the key indicators, do we love doing this? That's healthy. Like, do we really love doing what we're doing? Are we excited about what we're doing? And am I like dragging myself to the office or am I pumped about the meetings I got this day? Now, if I get to the point where I'm like, oh man, I got like a day full of meetings, that should be a real indicator of maybe something's not healthy. But if I'm if I'm looking at my day going, oh, I get to meet with my production team today because we're going to be talking about Amen Experience and all the cool things we're going to be doing. I'm talking with my campus pastors today because we're breaking new ground and we're strategizing. I'm going to meet with my Hope Hanger team today because we're distributing hope, and our challenge is to get more grants so we can do more work. The orientation is health. The way I'm looking at things is health. It doesn't change what I'm doing. I could look at my Hope Hanger meeting and go, we need more money. We can't, you know, keep supplying all this food. Well, I'm looking at it from a negative, toxic position. But if I look at it like, oh, we need more money so we can do more, what a great problem, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's health for us is in the way we view things, in the way we approach things. Are we approaching it from a place of health, or has it become toxic in our heart?
That's great. That's really great. And okay, so I want to like get a bit practical for a second, because I think, you know, it's obvious for someone who like follows you or knows what you guys do. Okay, you've got a bunch of locations and, you know, you did this incredible building campaign and bought this building in Silicon Valley, and you've got the nonprofit stuff, and you invest in companies, and you've got the hype, you know, you as right. So like the church is going to reflect in a big way, reflect you and your wife and your personality and your giftings, right?
Sure.
So you're naturally going to be innovative, but for the pastor that's listening or the church leader that's listening, who's like, ah, I'm just kind of like, I'm a pastor and I like teaching the Bible and I like pastoring people. And a two-part question. Do you think every church or pastor has a mandate of some kind within their own personality and gift mix to be innovative? And do you think every church should be innovative? And if so, what are some like really practical levels for someone's like, man, I'm in Missouri, or man, I'm not, you know, you got a big vision, Adam, you got a lot of energy, but I'm a local church pastor. How would you encourage them to innovate in their own like local context?
Wow. That's kind of a really challenging question. That's a challenging question.
Didn't mean to put you on the spot. do you think everyone should, man, take big swings, yeah, take big risks? And what's your thought around that?
I think everyone should take big risks. That's for sure. I think that everyone should swing for the fences. There's no doubt about that. Depending on your field and your gifting and your expertise, or just where your passion lies. I'm passionate about businesses. I'm passionate about seeing the kingdom advance through business leaders because, you know, finances unlock so much for what the church can do. The church is not limited spiritually. The church is not limited with authority. The area that the church has been limited is financially. And when the church gets that little pocket unlocked, man, all of a sudden the church with good stewardship does crazy things. So for me, I realized a long time ago that the key to unlocking finances in the church is unlocking business leaders, entrepreneurs, innovators. And so that's why I'm passionate about unlocking those things. And so, but I love, look, man, I'm preparing sermons as well. I love teaching the word of God. I'm a pastor at heart. I love preaching God's word, but I can't just do that. I've got to broaden my perspective to how do I start releasing areas in the church. So one of the things I did is I actually took some time, and I would encourage church leaders to do this because it doesn't just come overnight. You have to get a vision for it. And I went away and I spent 3 days on my own in Hawaii. Okay. I didn't take my family. I just went there on my own. And I spent 3 days. The first day I just prayed all day long. I walked with God. I prayed with God. I went in the ocean, swam. I just contemplated. I call it musing. I just mused about God and what's possible with him. And then I spent the next 2 days writing a 50-year vision for our church. I wrote all the spheres that the church should be infiltrating, all the different areas, what it looks like for the church to occupy this season, this area, all that kind of stuff. And what it kind of produced is what we're doing now. It's like the church needs to be innovative. The church needs to be in the music industry. The church needs to be in fashion. And so then what that does is it gets a framework for me not to do all these things, but to find people within my congregation who are going to lead these areas. And I got to release them. So I would say this, the pastor has to take big risks for sure, but the pastor does not have to necessarily be all these things. You just have to risk on people who got those things on their life.
Mm. That's really good. And that's ultimately the pastor's job, right? Is to
exactly
recognize things in people that maybe they don't recognize in themselves or do recognize in themselves, but say, hey, let's repurpose that ambition or passion or gifting to build the kingdom or whatever that might be, right? I mean, that's the ultimate part of the ultimate, you know, goal of
the
pastor.
I mean, that's the goal. I mean, and then you start to find key people, right, who are like way better at you than this, right? Like when we start thinking about building businesses, I got to Vance Roush. So it's like, Vance, how do we build killer businesses? Let's invest in people, bring that person in. I got Francesca, who's in the fashion industry, and be like, Fran, like, I mean, I don't know much about fashion, but you do. Let's build, you know, a brand that's going to be kingdom oriented. Let's get all these things together and start being the empowerer, build a platform for them to actually thrive off and to keep them centered in Christ. And keep them focused on achieving the mission and the vision, which is the overarching vision. Because underneath that is so much room for people to be creative and do their thing. But we just keep everyone running in the same direction. That's my job. And I would say that's the job for every pastor out there who's listening, who you said might not think that they're naturally like, I don't have that much energy either. All right, I'll be honest with you. I don't have that much energy. But I just like a lot of variety. I like a lot of different stuff. I like my week being exciting. I like knowing that next week I'll be in London and then this week I'll be here and I'm doing the King's work. I'm just building God's kingdom. And I think that that's what's really exciting about life is that variety of letting people run in their lane.
That's brilliant. I love that. Okay. So lastly, before we close, we can't, you know, get off this podcast without talking about AI. So,
yes,
man. So, you know, just quickly, you know, there's been this, I didn't even know, we just by happenstance got caught in the middle of this massive viral argument and conversation about should Christians use it? Should they not? If so, how? Should preachers use it? Pastors use it? Whatever. You know, on this podcast last week, we talked to one of the founders of PushPay. And, you know, his perspective was, you know, AI is one of the biggest technological innovations and transformations, honestly, since the internet. What do you think about it? How are you thinking about it? Just give me your theological, philosophical, church building thoughts around what this technology is, what it's going to unlock, and how you guys are even thinking about that, not just maybe in the church, but in the businesses that you're building and all that kind of stuff.
Man, yeah, we are, it's no surprise, we're pretty all in with everything AI. And we have been for some time. I mean, you were a very early adopter to the AI space, as were we. Actually, we started an AI company back in 2021 during the pandemic.
That's right.
Right when everything was crypto, right? Everything was the crypto push. We were kind of a little bit ahead looking at AI and trying to get some dominance in the space back then, just because we could foresee that this was the new internet. This was going to be the new era of what it looked like to actually have, I would say, intelligent, integrated learnings that would actually draw at speed and scale what would take generally decades and years the legwork's going to be done by AI. What's my position on theologically on AI? I think like everything, you walk with a caution. Okay. And I'm going to say this, and I know it sounds very conservative of me when I'm very bullish on AI, but you walk with everything with caution. Okay. Because, you know, now we're getting into AI, into robotics, AI, into humanoids. There's a lot of areas that naturally as a believer, you start coming up, you know, your mom's old message in your head, it's the mark of the beast, you know, all that kind of stuff. That stuff's always latent in me, Mike. Like it's in the back of my head.
Same. Man, this eclipse is coming up. I'm like thinking about the blood moon and the rapture, man. I'm
exactly. I grew up in a Pentecostal home and that's always looming in the background.
Yes.
But at the same time, I'm trying to carry that forward with, oh, cool. Is there a way I can redeem it? Because I know that my job is not to reject. My job is to redeem. Anything that the world creates, God made me a redeeming agent on the earth, not a rejecting agent on the earth. And too many Christians have become rejecting agents and not redeeming agents. Our job is to take technology and redeem it for the glory of God. So is the intent of a lot of technical advancements maybe for selfish gain or, you know, whatever? Sure, there's no doubt about that. But guess what? As kingdom agents, we get to see, how does this advance the kingdom? How does this advance the church? How does this actually become integral to the way that we can actually do the things at speed and at scale that we've never, ever done before? And for me, I get so amped on AI. Just the possibilities already that we're seeing. Like, even what your product does in taking my sermon and distilling it into group notes and to empowering our teams so quickly. Cause you know, let's remove AI for a moment. Let's talk about the groups function in the church. Groups are both the healthiest and the toxic thing in a church. You have a church split, It happens from a group. That's what
it always
happens.
Starts in a group. Yeah.
Yep. It's a place of gossip. It's a place where someone gets to preach their own sermons. It's where they get their little followers and they get more FaceTime than you do as the pastor. So groups are easily the most toxic thing in the church, but they become healthy if you have the right leaders and the right content. Now, I have to find the right leaders, but what AI is helping me is get my content into the leaders so they can be teaching my content, not their own revelations about blood moons and the end of the world, you know, in the group meeting. And so I get excited about AI so much because the advances, they're thrilling. They're really thrilling. I mean, I could go on and on, but that's my perspective.
Yeah, no, that's so good. I love that. Redeeming is such an important, I think it's such an, especially in the world of technology. And you know what's crazy is I will say, since we launched and we have, again, weirdly gotten this like visibility on X, which is where a lot of these like Silicon Valley, man, the amount of like Christians that are in artificial intelligence that are building, and by the way, not like a sermon repurposing tool, but like building drones and engines and like massive stuff, who have just hit me up and said like, man, we're cheering you on. And I'm looking at them going, man, I'm cheering you on because you're the one that is building. I'm not trying to devalue what we're building, but like, listen, a guy that's, you know, working in El Segundo, building spaceships and weaponry and using AI to do it, but doing that from a Christian worldview is like, they're doing a lot more than what we're doing. And so I think you're totally right. It's like building this stuff and not just thinking about how does it serve the church, but also, man, if you're a Christian and you work in technology now more than ever, like we need your voice, we need your hands.
Well, a lot of this stuff is helping humanity. A lot of this stuff is helping humans become better. I mean, we're talking about AI and photosynthesis. We're talking about AI and developing and solving world hunger. We've got AI systems. I've got a guy in my church who's developing, he's using AI to take air into water. You know, it's like, but you can't do that with just normal calculations. You need AI systems to be able to do that. Mm. Like the speed of what technology is getting us to is solving problems. And that's our job. Right? We want to solve problems of the world.
Yeah. I love it. Well, Pastor Adam Smalcolm, thank you for taking some time to chat with me this afternoon. It's always good to talk to you. We'll have to do this again soon. And we'll drop links if you're listening to this on just all the stuff you guys have going on. You've got your conference happening over the summer. You've got the Hype Network. You've got Vive Church. So we'll link to all that so that people can get connected to all that you guys are doing. But again, appreciate you being on. And I know everyone who listens is going to find this really helpful. I love you, man. We'll talk to you soon.